It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, after that podcast last week, Brad, do you think we have anybody still listening to us?
I do. I think it's going to become famous.
We're actually recording this before it's even played. In fact, I promised some people back in Pennsylvania it'd be airing a week ago, so it's already going to be
the effeminacy of religion, huh?
The effeminacy of religion thing. So I'm not sure. That was kind of edgy for us.
Did I cross some lines?
I don't know if you did. Maybe. We tried to ask Sarah about it because she's already heard it, and she was laughing so hard we never really got any decent feedback from her,
did we? Yeah, we were giggling girls at a slumber party over the man Christ Jesus. I wonder what they call us now.
Oh, boy, I don't even want to know.
There's a couple parts that were absolutely just too funny.
Well, I'll be on. Yeah, they were too funny. But
that whole circumcision song, that was too funny.
Well, people have heard all that by now, and I know.
That was too funny.
They either love us or they hate us or, you know, whatever.
I don't think they hate us.
Well, anyway, I'll be on vacation.
And if they do, they'll get over it.
I'm going to stay off the forum.
They'll get over it.
So what are you doing this summer for vacation, man? Are you taking some time to hang with your family?
Vacation? No, I'm slaving at the moment.
Hell in the hallway.
No, not hell in the hallway. It's just hot in the fields.
Okay. So you got that construction worth going.
Yeah, you know, we had that moment where it looked like the boat was going to sail into harbor and life was going to be smooth sailing for quite a while. And then the boat just turned around and left without explanation. Well, I was on the 1-inch yard line and... close you could taste it.
You were brokering a bit of a deal there, and the deal turned out not to happen.
Went sour. And it's like, but you know what? I mean, what I'm excited about is this too shall pass. And I think God he wants to teach me a little more about just relying and trusting and depending on Him. Yeah. And so it isn't hell in a hallway for me. I'm just going like, all right, Lord. Right now, I've got to be doing a whole lot more manual labor and stuff that's exhausting. But He's in that, too. You know, I'm not the only one. I imagine there's a whole bunch of folks out there that are having to do stuff that isn't as thrilling as they thought.
Yep.
And yet, God's part of that, too.
He is.
He's not absent from that.
He'll get them through to it.
So at some point, we're going to go on a road trip to Telluride, Colorado. And we're going to see a bunch of cool things between here and there. I don't know what.
Wow.
I know there's a bunch out there.
Sarah and I got our road trip next week. And I'm telling you, we'll be there when this is already playing. But this is not the kind of vacation I normally love to do. We're going to drive about 1,200 miles up to the Pacific Northwest and hang out on the Olympic Peninsula for a few days.
Ooh,
for a week or a little over a week. Someone's offered us a place to stay up there. We can bring our two dogs. And Sarah loves having me be a captive audience for those 2,400 miles round trip, because I tend to be somewhat distracted at times with everything I've got going on. So now we're going to communicate.
You're going to have some good conversations on the road.
We are. We even talk about the effeminacy of religion.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Woo!
Because that'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
But, I'm looking forward to it. Well, it's going to be the first time we've had a couple of weeks just totally off, just her and I to be together and not bombarded with
you
lots
need
of
that.
Things. So I'm so looking forward to it. To me, a two-weeker is just really good because it takes a week to kind of decompress and then you get to enjoy the second.
Yeah, we've learned, you know, one-week vacations just go by way too quick.
They do.
You add a
particularly spend the first 3 days in the car with two dogs and a mad woman.
Yeah, but she would do that one-ear trick. That would be cool.
She does, but you know what? It's a long way to do that one-ear trick. They do get a little bored. So
that'll last about to Bakersfield.
I'll actually do better. We've gone on 6-hour trips before, but I don't know. This is about an 18-hour one, so we'll see.
All right.
Yeah, it should be fun.
So we're going to tackle a little bit of the God and mammon stuff and money and systems, huh?
There's been a lot of number of things that have been on the forum from different folks. One, the whole idea, particularly people like you and I that were vocationally trained for quote-unquote ministry, and then find yourself not part of a system that takes care of that for you.
Right.
People are, you know, how does that sort out, particularly if people still have a passion to help equip others in on this journey? And so I think that's a deal. And the other deal, we've had a lot of questions. Probably the most asked question when I travel is two questions I get asked the most. One is about, you know, what do you do with kids if you're not into Sunday school? And, you know, these questions used to be really serious questions for me when I, you know, a few years ago. Now it's kind of like, what? Why do we expect that Sunday school is going to be helpful for our kids? Now, that's hard for me to imagine them the other way. You know, a kid in Sunday school, that concerned me more than not. But the other one is about tithing. You know, is that an obligation we have? And, you know, I had the question asked on Sunday with the group I was at in Pennsylvania. You know, where do I send my tithe now if I don't go to one of those Sunday morning deals?
And send it to Wayne.
No, I didn't say that, fortunately. So I think it'd probably be good for us to kind of, the first time we did God and Mammon, gosh, a long time ago now, but we talked about some of the whole idea of decision making and, you know, being free to
in terms
not...
of who are you going to serve. You know, ultimately you can respond to God, or you can kind of figure you're on some survival track and I got to figure out where the buck's going to come from.
Yeah, is your life going to revolve around money, or is it going to revolve around him?
And it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor.
Nope.
You can be, and money's not evil.
Yep. And but, circumstances can change. I got an email this week from a guy in his 50s at a big prosperous business, and the whole thing's collapsing right now, and he has any idea what to do and how God's going to provide for him next, but he had a real sense of hope in his heart that God would. So, you know, there's no point in our life where we're going to escape. You know, what do we do about this, and how do we sort out the practical aspects of finances in our lives? And how, I think particularly one of the intriguing things to me is how much the need for money defines what our religious systems look like.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And
you just had a mouthful right there.
Yeah, and it's like a whole herd of cows thinking about falling over. They can see us coming at them with the little boot to tip them.
Well,
Did you see the sketch Dave sent us?
Oh, I thought that was way to go, Dave. That was that was fantastic.
A couple of cleric types.
We should put that up.
Oh, we will put it up on the website somewhere. It'll be up by the time this airs, but yeah. That was funny.
You do look at the whole reality that, you know, institutions, if they're going to survive and thrive, they need their life's blood, which is money. Okay? And so if you're within the institution, it needs resources to continue. If you're going to have a hired professional class.
I wonder if it doesn't even start back a step ahead of that. Not that the institution needs money. But we actually create the institution because someone needs to make a living at this. I even look at that, you know, it's people who spill out of ministry. The next step in not being in a professional congregational ministry situation is to be a coordinator of a network of house churches. Because And what underlies a lot of it, when you really talk to people, you know, why are you doing it this way? Well, you know what, trying to figure out. And if they're really honest, a lot of what drives that often is the need for somebody
to make a living,
either make a living or have an identifiable gift that's available to help people grow. And I think it drives so much of what our institutions become what they become, because you've got to have a certain, once you start having people on staff and buildings to pay for very quickly. And I know people like to say, well, God's our provider. We don't think about that, but I have never been involved with an institution for which money is not the overriding concern and issue about what we do or don't do.
Yeah. That is mammon making decisions right there.
Yep.
And the reality is, you know, when you look at the whole business of religion, my biggest problem about the whole money dynamics is that it absolutely warps everything. What began as something simple, pure, and true, and someone's desire to say, gosh, I feel like God's put it in my heart to want to do this, as soon as that tastes a measure of success and there's an it that has been created, then there's a need to service it. And to do that, it's almost as if it does become a business. The people that are there are no longer people. They are repeat customers.
Ooh.
And you have,
ooh,
you
ooh.
Have to, you have to serve that clientele or they will go elsewhere, down to the First Baptist competitor.
Wow.
And when you look at it, he's like, oh my gosh, no one I know intended that to be the dynamic. But then when you go from, you know, the rent a building and the church here, there, and everywhere, to all of a sudden you have your own facility. Now you have a regular mortgage and a set of bills and utilities that have to be paid. Well, how's that going to happen? Well, you better make sure that the offering's up and that the people are there. And, you know, I remember just what new verse can I say over the offering?
What new encouragement can we use to keep this going?
And one of the things that got me bounced out of the whole system is I began to realize that not just the 501c3 was defined as the church. The 501c3 institution is the only one that will get you a legitimate tax break.
We were in one of your gatherings on Sunday morning. It was a guest speaker there we wanted to hear. We were down there that morning, and you were taking the offering at the end of the service, as I recall. And the head guy wasn't around. And I remember you got up, you said something about, you know what, we're going to take an offering here, helps with some of the stuff going on around here, but if this is not where Jesus has called you to give, there might be lots of other things he's put on your heart to give to you, feel free to do that. I'll lean over to Sarah and said, this man's days are numbered, man. You can't talk that way here and survive.
I was shortly fired not too long after that whole dynamic, and one of the things that was my list of crimes was, it was the way that I didn't focus on the offering. And you're just going like, one of the things that I did with the evening service, because no one was there watching me, is I just told folks, I said, look, stand up. You're the church. If you need a tax break, you can give to the bag here, and we'll give you an official tax break, and we'll do something with it. But everybody here is the church. And if you listen to God, who knows what God might ask you to do? And some of the stories that came out of people's just giving to one another and the way that needs that were not hinted at got met were just mind-blowing. And it was so fun because at the beginning of the service, usually a whole bunch of people would come up and just put cash in my hand because they knew I'd do this. At the offering time, I'd say, basically, who's out here that doesn't, you need money right now. Right now, you do not need to give. You need to receive. And I would give out cash to folks. And I'm sure some of them were lying. And I'm sure some of them took it. But the reality was, it was fantastic because it unleashed a generosity in our group because they didn't feel manipulated. They didn't feel like they were under compulsion. And they didn't feel like they had to participate. They only did what they felt like they wanted to do. And I got to tell you, it unleashed something in our little community of people because now they were excited about being an instrument through whom God might actually meet a particular need.
Wow.
That was fun, but I got bounced out for it. It was bad.
Yeah,
pay the mortgage of the church.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you pay that mortgage and how do you pay your salary?
I got fired for that, and it wasn't the only reason, but it was one of the things that said, this guy's too dangerous, he's got to go.
Yeah, someone sent me a column that someone wrote, trying to pick out the guy's name here, but can't even find it on the thing. It's at townhall.com, in any case. And one of these guys, he was talking about the whole industry that surrounds Christianity, whether it's publishing or music or institutional thing. One of the lines he uses, and I guess he's quoting from a book called Simplicity. He's explaining why some guy left the Christian music industry. He said, Christianity as an industry is a conflict of interest. Now, that's a statement.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a kick in the tail. But it seems so easy for that to happen when your resource is locked up in the kinds of ministry things God might be asking you to do. And I know that's one that you and I've talked about a lot because, you know, I live and work by, I do some tent making with the Bridge Builders thing when I do consulting for public schools. I've painted houses before and done things like that, though not recently. Also because of some of the books I sell and some of the ways people contribute when I go visit places and help with stuff. And sometimes people just contribute because they're saying, man, I love what you're doing and I'll help pay the expenses of it. Though it's something we don't really ask for. I mean, we do say to folks, if you want to, there's ways to do it. But the whole idea, this is something that Sarah and I have wrestled with, the people we pray with about the things I do have wrestled with in terms of, you know, selling books versus giving them away versus, you know, I know I don't charge for virtually anything that I do in terms of the internet space we provide and stuff that's on there. When I travel and teach, I don't demand a certain I had this kind of talk this weekend with a guy. Said, you know, we loved about having you out here is we know other speakers that there's a bottom line, $4,000 or $5,000 minimum for a weekend, and if you don't come up with that, they don't show up. And I just, I mean, I don't understand that. I know people.
Yeah, I have got a hard time stomaching that. And I recognize everyone's got a mortgage and bills to pay, but that just does not seem to emulate what Jesus did.
I guess there's a difference between doing what God's asked you to do, and out of that, He may resource you, versus doing what you're doing to be resourced and doing with what you're doing to
hire
high to that. I know when one of my, and I grew up a farmer's son, and so we got this Puritan work ethic crammed down our being that if you don't work, you don't eat. And I tell you, this journey 12 years ago when God, I felt like God asked Sarah and me, just do what I've asked you to do, and I'll take care of you. And that was the hardest thing. I would rather, get enough bridge builder events every month to pay the freight so that I don't even have to think about, how else this works. But through the early days of this thing, it was such a struggle, even though God took care of us right along through. Bless you, brother.
Thank you.
Right along through, He's taking care of us and He's providing for our stuff. But I'm still feeling irresponsible because I'm not doing anything to make this happen. And I'm not charging for things that I could charge for, even though we've sold some books and CD things. That's been helpful. And I was with a guy staying in a home. I was visiting some brothers and sisters in New England, and I was staying in this home with a Catholic man who's the only person that was tangential to this group. He didn't attend the meetings we were at, but he had an extra bedroom and invited me to stay with him. And one morning he gets up for breakfast and he sits down with me and he says, I don't know who I am to even say this to you, but he said, I was reading something yesterday and I felt like God wanted me to make a copy of it and give it to you. And so he hands me a copy of this chapter from a book by Watchman Nee about the normal Christian church.
Oh, danger, danger.
Yeah. Well, it was hysterical. I'm reading this thing. This is only 3 or 4 years into this, and I'm having a fairly, even though I'm not asking and begging people for money, I'm having a fairly significant stress level about how is this going to work if I don't? And he hands me this chapter. And basically, just the chapter as I recall, it was something about whoever lives in the freedom of making the gospel known in their life. There's two things they really need to be aware of. Number one, don't ever ask people for money. Only ask God for it. And number two, if a man can't trust God to provide for him, God will not entrust him with his people. And I remember reading this. And I was thinking, okay, this is what I've always afraid was true. Now I think it's right on. I do think the reality is thing. And I was talking to somebody the other day that's trying to figure out how to make a living and some of the ministry desires that they have. And I just said, I think that's just totally backwards. I think you've got to start by saying, Jesus, what have you asked me to do? And do it.
Yeah.
Instead of starting a ministry or starting something that's going to guarantee something, just do what God's asked you to do. And then watch how God resources you. And if in time there's the freedom to, other people perhaps see your life being valuable in that way and are willing to help support that so you're released, I think that's a great thing. Women did it for Jesus in the Bible. Others did it for Paul, helped them do. I think that's a fine thing. But it's a difference between you committing people to it, raising support, asking people, and putting them on the spot. And it's another thing just do, trusting that God's going to put it on people's hearts when they need to participate with you. And that's kind of the journey we've spilled out on. And, it's an ongoing struggle for us. We talked about this new CD series, audio series, that we're going to make available free of charge from Livestream just because we feel like that's what God's asked us to do, and it's valuable enough to do that. Some of our books, even though we sell them, they're available free as well, so people can, get them. But that's an ongoing struggle for me.
But Wayne, part of that is why I just have had the utmost of respect of how you've walked this thing out. I have, money issues were the reason I had to blow the whistle on what was going wrong. And I just looked at ministry and I've just gone like, gosh, what began as so sincere and so right just went so wrong, largely because it was so warped by the economics that were around it. And I've avoided the whole, being paid ministry. I have no less a sense of God's call on my life.
Right.
But the thing that I'm so excited about in terms of doing the God journeys, because we do this just free and clear. And, we've talked about, God, how do we cover the expenses and what do we do? And when we look at all that, I always keep coming back to the place that, what makes me so excited about this and why I just sort of feel such a freedom in the doing is because, one, I know God asked us to do it. And two, he has provided. And two, we're not begging.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we could have gone the route of a radio thing, and we were considering that and had opportunity. But it just seemed like this was such an easy right step that in the midst of our trying to figure out, God, what really did you ask us to do?
Yep.
This just seemed like a natural thing to put out there. And, you know, without any promotion, trying to make this a big deal, it has been great to just actually sit back and watch and see what God would do with it, where he would, you know, have this go. And when I look at what's developed around this, this is one of the things that I'm just most confident about. God is in.
Yep.
And we haven't tainted it with the economics on it. And you're just going like, I love that.
Yep.
And it's not as if those things are wrong. You know, I mean, Paul brings forth in the scripture that, you know, a laborer is worthy of his, don't muzzle the ox while he's treading out the grain. It's fine. I don't think it's wrong for someone to take money in the midst of doing ministry. But what Watchman Nee's talking about is if God wants to provide for you, great. And if he wants to provide you through that, great. But we got this so backward.
Yeah, but if you're doing it to be provided for.
See, I mean, I have
makes
so
a
many
huge jump.
Yeah, I have so many friends that are in ministry that, you know, it's like they have supporters that they have to ramp up. They've got to constantly be reporting back all the great things that are going on. So it just feels like a ton of self-promotion.
Yep.
And then they've got to come up with the next latest, greatest, wonderful thing that God is doing that's essential to the planet. And there just seems a fair amount of hype about what they're called to do. They better be on the cutting edge. And then there's all the machinery around the fundraising to keep this thing going. And at the heart, there may be a sincere effort to accomplish something. And they might believe that God would ask. But what surrounds it just seems like it takes on a life of itself.
And it does change it over time. That's, I think, what I depend on for people that I love, that look over my shoulder at the things that I do. And I've said this absolutely to some of them. When it looks like we've changed from doing what God asks us to do to doing what we need to do to financially survive, would you knock me upside the head and let me know?
I'll be first one there with a baseball bat.
And I've asked a lot of people to do that because I don't know that we get this right all the time. I think we're a long ways from saying, yeah, we're getting it right. But what I do know, I think what's clear in my heart, because God's, and I could tell some stories of how God has just miraculously provided in ways when I was obstinately not helping him provide and even willing to go into debt and pay for it later if he didn't, and watch him come through and know that God was incubating in my heart. I don't feel like when I go out, people say, Wayne's here by faith. You know, he's not asked us for anything to come, blah, blah. It always sounds prettier than it is. And I usually have to get up and give this disclaimer saying, you know what? I don't feel like God's great man of faith and power about stuff like this. I just feel like God has proven me over and over again that he's asked me to do what he's asked me to do, and he's promised to resource it. And when that changes, and I think a great day in my life will come when God says, get a real job and stay home every night of your life. I mean, I tell you what, that will be a great day. And I don't know when that's coming, but I don't enjoy being away from Sarah, the number of nights I'm away from Sarah in a year. I don't enjoy going through airports and getting on airplanes, but I have this thing that I think God's asked me to do, and that's to encourage brothers and sisters to live free.
Yeah.
What I think the danger is, and I'm on that slope all the time. I'm not unaware that this is also a danger, is that somehow the need to provide money for the vision, whatever that is, begins to define who you are and how you relate to people. And I think what you were getting to a moment ago gets to the bedrock thing. If I'm doing something that God's asked me to do to touch lives, that's very different than if I have to create an ongoing dependent market. Yeah. To justify my existence or to help pay the bills around here. And fortunately, we've not had to get close to that because God's been so gracious to provide for us month after month for 12 years. We never start a month knowing how financially we get to the end of it, and yet month after month, God say, I don't even think about it anymore. I don't think about it when I travel. I don't think about it when I'm home at night. I just have seen God continue to take care of us, and I'm pretty cool with that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at first, that terrified me. You know, when I got bounced out of what we were doing, there was no severance, no nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave me a letter that if I would sign that I would never sue them, then they would give me a month. You know, and he said they're going like, I can't do this. And it's like, I have no intention of suing, but I'm not going to sign that for a check. And
you just it's like you're selling like, your soul, huh?
Oh, God. Yeah. And you're just like, Lord, what's going on? But I remember that day felt so freeing because it was like, okay, from here on out, I do not know. I don't have a foggiest clue what we're going to do or what's going to happen. But God brought me on a journey where I realized, you know what? God is my source. And I have no desire to try to hook up to anything else. And I enjoy today that living with that sense of uncertainty, of not knowing, because it brings me to a place of dependence.
Yeah.
It brings me into a relationship where it's like, hey, God, I do know I need you.
Yeah.
I'm under no false delusion. You know, right now I'm landscaping and doing construction because I can. Do I think that's what I'm called to do? No. But it's interesting. I think the people I'm working with and for, I'm called to be in their lives right now.
Yeah.
And so there's a sense of going like, no, I don't particularly enjoy the work. I'm tired. It's hard. I'd like to be more creative. And you know, labor intensive work doesn't really help the creative process.
That's right.
You know,
don't so feel like it was like, 10 o'clock at night yeah, writing sessions.
Like, hey, Lord, you know, help out here. But I just realized I haven't been relegated to this forever. This is what I'm doing for now. This is the opportunity that God provided.
Yeah.
And when I look at that, it's like, am I expressing the call? You know what? Yes. Because I take seriously who I'm with and what the day is like. And when I do, I enjoy that. If I was to get focused on the task,
right,
I'd be really depressed right now.
Yep.
But since I'm recognizing this is just what brings me to this geography and with this community, this is my entrance.
Yep.
It's not what I'm here for.
Yep.
I'll do that job. And I'll be glad to do that job. But to look at this from a dynamic of going like, Lord, please be the orchestrator of my life. Please be my provider. And if you want to just send a check and I get freedom, great. If you want to provide an opportunity and it's work, equally great.
Yep.
And it has taken a while for me to kind of settle in to that dynamic of going like, there's not a system surrounding this that owns me.
And that's the deal. When you're going to trust God as provider, you don't get to really choose how he provides. You
I
really
haven't.
Don't.
Yeah. I mean, thought it was that deal that was going to yield me, you know.
I think the old living by faith thing we always heard about is, well, you just trust God to provide, so you just, you know, sit around the couch and, you know, do whatever you want to do, and hopefully the money comes in or you beg it off your friends.
Yeah, they better hope their food stamps.
Is not real effective. It isn't. But I know from the other side of this, I know maybe it sounds like we're kind of patting each other on the back a little bit for where we're at with some of this stuff, but for me, it's been some really hard lessons learned. I remember when I was pastoring in one of those things, and the number of times we felt like God asked us to do certain things that would more release the body to be the body, and we would even have conversations among the staff of, but then how does that justify why we get paid? And so
at least that's honest.
I was very honest, but we would conclude, well, then that can't be what God's asking, because, you know, I think we made a lot of bad decisions. So I know what it is to be on the side of somehow we have to make this work financially first and then kind of minister what life we can with that instead of, no, let's just do what God's asked us to do. I'm on it. I know people with a lot of vision. I hope God releases their life someday to, you know, in a full-time way. I hate that term, but, you know, just having the freedom to spend their lives equipping people. But honestly, tell you right now, they're not ready yet. If they were free full-time to do what they do, they'd be planning so much stuff, everybody near them would be worn out.
Exhausted.
As can be. Yeah. I think there's a fruitfulness that comes in ministry and in life, and then there's an obedience to God's provision in that. And I don't know that for me it's, you know, it's a lifetime thing. It may change tomorrow. God might say, you know what? Grab a hoe, you're out there helping Brad tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's what the key is. I think we're always looking for something that will secure the future so I don't ever have to live in a daily dependence.
Yep.
And I think that's completely opposite of the life we've been called unto, which is one of daily dependence on God.
Which Matthew 6 is all about. Luke, a Sermon on the Mount thing, you know, just every day, let God take care of you and do what he gives you to do. Seek the kingdom first, he'll take care of you. I do think that's what it says, but the reality is in our age of financial planning and being responsible about the future, it really seems irresponsible to say, I'm just following God today. And if tomorrow it changes, I'm changing with him.
Oh, yeah, don't I know it. I mean, my whole extended family, I think, looks upon me as an idiot at times.
Hopefully not listening to the podcast, but I hear you.
Yeah, well, even if they are, at least they understand why, you know, there's a purpose behind being my, you know, my idiocy. But it is with that sense of, I want to be free to obey the Lord. But I'm also not looking just for easy street.
Yep.
I think at times I have. And at times I'm disappointed when it doesn't come.
Yep.
But to realize that, you know, I'm thankful that I actually have work.
But we haven't got to the other side of the system yet. We talk about the side of needing to make the money and, you know, that demand, if we think of it that way. We haven't really talked about the other side of how we've taught people to tithe to do that. Tithing something you used to teach?
Yeah.
Still do?
No.
No?
No. It's something I knew all the ins and outs, and I could quote all the verses. And it's funny, I came to the conclusion that that wasn't exactly what God was asking while I was still in the system, which is helpful.
Yeah.
Because, I think while you're in the system, it's like it's anathema to proclaim that we're still not under that demand.
Well, when you're the beneficiary of it, and I think anybody that has one of those things going on, and you're renting buildings, paying staff, you realize a significant number of people here need to be giving 10% of their income to make this dynamic work.
Yeah.
It's very easy. And I know I grew up with storehouse tithing. Your tithe belongs here. If you're giving to missions, other things, it's got to come out of other parts of your, well, it comes from other parts of your resources. Yeah. And man, I even grew up with that sense of if you don't tithe, then you're robbing God, the Malachi thing. And then God's coming to, then the enemy's coming to get 20% if you don't give God 10, you know, it was that kind of a deal.
Even though that was written to the leaders of the temple priest. It wasn't an open letter to everyone.
Right.
That section was written to actual leaders.
It doesn't matter. It's so powerful in manipulating people. And then you get to the New Testament, except for this one little reflection from Jesus about it, about in the larger discourse of you tithe this, but you miss the weightier things. That's enough to bring it in.
See, he affirmed it there.
And, I do tell people when they ask me about tithing, if you belong to one of those things that require an awful lot of money to provide the services that you enjoy, you ought to think about giving a significant part of your income to help that happen. I think that's just responsible. If you're part of it,
being a freeloader,
be part of it. But to think that's your gift to God when most of what goes on there benefits you, it's your place to go, your place. It's like clubs now with gyms and everything else.
Every club has dues.
Yeah. So
every church is going to have a tithe.
But where I've settled out on this tithe, and I just tell people, where I've settled out on this, I think everything in the Old Covenant is the shadow of a greater reality. Tithing is one of those shadows. If you can just throw God 10% of your money, and then take the other 90% and do with whatever you want, that's a pretty cheap substitute to living your whole life under God. And everything I have is his, and he directs it all for his glory. Not a lot of people who say that and who hoard every dime they have for themselves. And what are you going to do about that? I just think that's something God's going to have to deal with in time. But I think when we learn to live, I think the real essence of giving in the New Testament, and we're going to do a whole show on this part, I think, because I think people... Religion teaches us to live with a miserly God. I mean, it seems like 90% of our prayers aren't answered, and it's just, you know, we give God 10%, but then we're short in every other area of our life.
We only paid for 10% of the answers.
because of all the ways we live in our culture. I don't think, I know I didn't. I didn't even understand God being generous with me. I could use the language about him because Scripture did, but in a pragmatic sense, had no reality to that. In the last 10, 12 years, we've lived in God's generosity. And when you live in God's generosity, it's nothing to turn around and be generous with other people. And I think that's what 2 Corinthians 7, 8, and 9 is talking about. When they're collecting an offering, Paul's not appealing to tithing. You owe 10%. He's just saying, man, in the way God's measured out to you, if you have a lot, give back to people who don't have a lot. If you don't have anything right now, let other people's resource help you get through your tough pit. He changes the whole thing. It's not a reality. Everybody gives 10%, even in the pit of your need. But connect with God as a generous God. And when you do that, you will be generous with others. You'll be generous with people who are poor, who don't have it. And, you know, crises happen in the world, and American Red Cross or other ministry things are in the area. Get money to where people need it. I mean, we have such an abundance. Yeah, we'll probably talk about that at some point.
Yeah,
by the same token, I think it's also cool if you see people doing what's, you know, helps others live in this life and helps others walk out of painful things. And I think it's okay to say, you know what, we're going to support that person doing what they do. I think that's a cool use, too. But it's not, I think Sarah and I, at the end of a year, we're not saying, do we give 10%? I think we look at our taxes when we do them and say, not just giving the 501c3s either, even what we just give out of our lives to other folks. We always look and say, is that well over 10%? Because if it's not well over, then I think we sit back and say, are we living on God's generosity, or are we starting to clutch for ourselves? And so I think it's a good benchmark, but it's, again, it's a shadow. It's not the reality of something.
Yeah, and I think that the whole demand of it removes it. I mean, you pay tithes.
It's a bill. Yeah,
yeah, it's like it doesn't release. It seems like the New Testament talks about the generosity of God and giving. Give. Pressed down, shaking together. I mean, you give and it will be given unto you. I mean, there's enough verses in there that God is sort of expecting us not to be in a selfish place. This is not all about us.
Exactly.
And selfishness does seem to be kind of antithetical to the kingdom.
Nor is it a compulsion thing, because that's also antithetical to
yeah.
the kingdom. I'm yeah. doing this because I'm obligated to, and if I don't, God's going to be disappointed in me, or he's not going to let me participate in his blessings. And again, we've disconnected even our money from the relationship instead of, no, it's in the relationship that God reveals these things.
Yeah, and I mean, when I look at this, you know, the whole idea, I mean, I used to be up there taking the offering, talk about giving unto God. You're just going like, you're not.
I wish I had tapes of that.
I know, you're not. I'm sure I do. You're not giving to God. You're giving to that institution. I know that that was a wonderful manipulation, but the reality is, and I don't think it's wrong to give to institutions.
Absolutely not.
Help them, support
them. Particularly
if
you're a benefactor of it.
They will not exist without you. I think it's only right that you do. You know, no one argues about paying $10 to go see a movie.
Yeah,
I
hear some people.
I wish it wasn't like, $10.
We go to matinees; they're cheaper.
Yeah. But no one argues about whether it's right or not. And you just go, well, you know, thoroughly entertained.
Oh, I get some letters sometimes from people that are upset that I'm selling the Jake book now, you know, instead of, it's still free on the internet, but yeah, I do get that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with those dynamics. What I get bothered by is when you don't acknowledge that those are the dynamics.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Be honest. This isn't a demand that you can make biblically. I mean,
and you're not currying God's favor by doing it.
Yeah. And you're not going to be cursed if you don't. I mean, I think the whole performance trap and the blessings and cursings that they just, you just go like, gosh, Mike, we have rebuilt the Old Testament when we've been called into a new and a living way. And just going like, what's going on here?
In Galatians 5, I come back to this verse a lot about so many things. It would include money as well as time and everything else. But Galatians 5, when Paul says, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself in love. There's no obligation in that. There's no...
But I gave 10%.
Get the ritual, get the principle, get that work. You know, tithing is a way to work God to get blessings. I mean, I just think that cheapens the whole deal.
Yeah. It really does.
The reality is, like anything else, I think the freedom of the new covenant is, listen, Jesus wants to walk with you. That's going to happen not out of compulsion, not out of being forced, not out of being a system you can play. It's a relationship with him where everything you have becomes part of him and his life. And he can lead you on. And you don't need to do one thing above what you genuinely want to do out of the reality of that relationship, and you don't curry favor by it. And I think that's true of, you know, whether or not you go to a service, whether or not you go to a house church, whether or not you pay money to this, support that, share with the needy there. Do what you do, because your relationship within in him has filled your heart to do it.
Yeah.
So you're doing it out of the relationship. It's not your substitute. It's not the way to buy your way into it. That perverts the whole thing, and I think it perverts every system that we have devised. Because instead of us doing what we're doing because God's asked us to, we're letting the demands to finance it control how we do what we do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you said, you know, doing it faith, working through love, you look at the whole dynamic of, you know, Romans says whatever is not done in faith is sin. And, it, you know, the context is let your convictions be made known and makes them sure. And you look at the whole dynamic. I tell most folks, it's not like, well, is tithing still, you know, for, go find out.
Yep.
Go find out. All you got to do is do a Google search on the internet, and you're going to get a ton of articles.
I thought you were going to tell them to read the scripture. You're going to tell them to find out by Googling tithing?
No, read the scriptures for yourself. But if you do a Google search, it's like there's going to be no lack of arguments for and against to be able to work your way through and kind of figure. I've read some incredibly compelling things that, at the end of the day, would leave you just sort of wrapped up in such a legalistic bind that you wouldn't, but you know, cursed if I don't. And it's like, when you look at this, you've got to know what it is that God's asked of you. And it's not enough to know, well, you know, Brad Wayne don't think you need to. You got to know what God's really asking of you. And the whole dynamic is, I love what you said on the last time that we did the whole God and Mammon thing. The whole dynamic of – yeah, I do. I listen to it.
Okay.
The whole thing of tithing is it cheapens the real dynamic. Who owns my life? Do I?
Yeah.
Or does God? I don't think we're owners of our stuff. I think we're stewards.
Yeah.
I do think I have to give an account of everything. Of every opportunity, of every asset. Well, I do think those realities, God's going to say, what'd you do? And I don't think that that's like, oh no, religious obligation. It's more like, Lord, I don't want to mess up thinking that I own this stuff. I do want to have always in front of me, I'm a steward. It's yours. It's a privilege to be a part of what, you think of living in America. Being able to listen to a podcast, having an iPod or an MP3 player, excuse me, you are the elite of the elite.
Yep.
And having walked through the streets of Calcutta and been in the jungles of Uganda, I've got a wonderful frame of reference that just says, guess what? I have nothing to complain about.
Yep.
Whatever it is that I'm struggling with is nothing in comparison to the life and death that many of the world has to live with day in and day out. And if I, in my luxury, cannot find a way to become a resource that freely releases what I have, then I don't understand much of the kingdom at all.
Yeah, and I think the accountability that you talked about, the only way we're ever going to be good stewards of what we have is not to try and figure it out and do something with our money that we think is good. It comes right back to the relationship. Whatever you do out of the full freedom of loving him will meet everything he ever desires. And what we do to try and figure that out won't. And so it still comes back to, I mean, what we talk about is going to come back to the same thing. There's a way to walk with him that you're going to know what it is that God wants you to do with your stuff. And when you live in that freedom of a generous God and be generous with people around you, that's how the kingdom goes forward.
Yeah, it's God or mammon. And then you're going to listen to him,
right back,
or you're
going
to be going right back to your little financial deal.
And that's no fun.
It doesn't work.
And that's not only hell in the hallway, that's hell in the checkbook.
Yeah.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.